Welcome to the best podcast in the world. This is the Strength and Skills Podcast. This is Nick Cibusek, your favorite host in the world for the best podcast in the world with his your most favorite co-host in the world, Rado the Boss Bossage.
Hi. What's up, Nick?
I'm so energized. All right. After this so energized, very warm welcome for all the listeners, we would like to take you guys on a ride today. And the ride today is a very large topic that we love to talk about because it's so interesting. And we might have different opinions about that with you as a listener, and maybe you have some stuff where you don't agree, or maybe you do agree, but on the other hand, that's why we are listening to podcasts, to hear new views on stuff. All right, let's jump into this. The big topic today is injury prevention, and we're gonna talk about, is it really injury prevention, or is what we need some risk reduction? And that's going to be interesting because everybody in the world is stretching the shit out of themselves and is doing all the mobility drills. And we're going to question this today. Is mobility preventing? What do you think, Rado?
You have it everywhere. Top five exercises to prevent injuries. It's all over YouTube, all over the mainstream media stuff. And let's play with these words, with this wording, injury prevention or injury risk reduction. So I prefer the term injury risk reduction because when you look at it, injury prevention, you can't really prevent injuries. Like if you're someone who trains heavy, sooner or later, an injury is going to happen, you know? And this is due to many, many factors. It's the reality, and it's something that you have to live with and accept, you know? If you're thriving in a sport, it happens. It happens to the best athletes, happens to us. And you have different sports, and different sports have different injury rates, no? And when you look at weight training, it's relatively low in risk in comparison to something like football, you know, where you have really a lot of movement variety and you can't really plan positions. Here, you're just moving in pretty straightforward motions and you can do a lot of stuff to actually reduce your injury risk, no? So, yeah, it's a reality we have to accept. Injuries are going to happen. You can't plan it. You can't really know when it's going to happen, of course. But you can't prevent it, huh? Just as you said. And this stuff with mobility being a preventive measure for injuries, it's a myth, huh? It's not working. It's the harsh truth that people have to accept. I was the one to believe that thing too, that mobility reduces risk of injuries and like, you know, do this mobility drill, it's going to bulletproof your joints, just going to be joints out of steel, you know, joints out of steel. And you do the middle split, you have hips of iron, and then nothing's going to happen to you on a sumo deadlift. That simply isn't the case. Yeah.
Absolutely. On the other hand, to discuss this a little bit more, you have people like, let's say, Coach Summer, the ex national gymnastics coach of the US, who once said something what always sticked in my mind. He said, if the best in the world stretch the shit out of themselves, what reason do you have to not do it? Oh, that's interesting because, of course, you have another one. I mean, he's coming from gymnastics, and gymnastics, they need to have a lot of flexibility and mobility for the stuff that they are doing. On the other hand, they also have the difference here is they don't only have to be flexible, they also have to be very mobile. When you do stuff on the rings where you just need to be able to move your body through your arms, like rotating all the way and stabilizing yourself in every position that you're doing, then of course you need maybe some more mobility, flexibility stuff than other people. On the other hand, what's this thing right here? Is this really about flexibility and mobility, or is it being able to stabilize in certain ranges?
Yeah, that's a really interesting topic, you know? And I think that we have to look at the settings that we're talking about when you look at gymnastics, for example. I mean, those are really extreme positions compared to something like a squat or setting up for a deadlift or a bench press or dip, whatever, you know? And they obviously need to put in specific work in order to be able to get into those positions. I mean, when you look at something like a mana, which is an extreme skill where you have this immense amount of shoulder extension that you need to be able to maintain, you know, of course you need to have specific mobility stuff in order to progress to that. But for the average person, you probably don't need any specific mobility work to get into basic positions. You know, if you do it for the sensation, like you feel good after stretching, feel free to do so. But if you do it for injury prevention, you're just wasting your time. Simply is like that. But to kind of hop onto the topic of stability, that's really interesting that you noted. Like, I think it's important that we define what stability is. So if you could maybe just brief definition of what you find stability is.
To me, I would say stability is to be able to bring force into a certain range of motion, which is actually most of the time not flexibility. As flexibility, let's say that's something where you get pulled into maybe from gravity or something. Like if you go into a German hang, the last position of that, when you're really hanging in a German hang, you probably, that's not the most stable position for you in most cases. Same goes for when you may stretch overhead. The last position, really stretch the arm backwards overhead, is probably not the most stable position for you, as you press yourself into a position that you usually can't reach. That's flexibility to me. And this is where mobility comes in. And this is why I always connect mobility with stability. As let's say I have a certain range with some of my arm or my leg or something, or even with my spine, yeah, certain ranges where I can move into. What I would say what stability is, you are stable in the range that you can hold for a certain amount of time, for longer time, without having issues there, without maybe even breaking a sweat or something. This may be something like a deep squat position where you just sit in there. And when you really have the perfect positioning right there, you are stable in that position. And then you put that to the test with maybe an amount of weight on your shoulders. Going into that, are you still stable in that position? And that's the same thing that you can maybe do with an overhead position, where you maybe you can reach overhead. How stable is that position actually when you put it to the test with some weight or a handstand actually? That's, I would say that's some mobility, but also some stability overhead, in my opinion. So stability is always when you put pressure on something, how stable is it in the end? So that's like a house. You would say a house maybe made out of wood is stable, usually. A classic one. The one that you build with your kids in the garden. A classic house there. This is not unstable. But is it as stable as the house of stone that you are living in? Probably not. Except of when you are that building guy in the garden.
Yeah. So would you say like stability is the ability to maintain positioning and rigidness and ranges?
Pretty much, yes.
Or is it also connected to other parts of the movement? So not just this extreme position, like the bottom of the squat or the end of an overhead press, you know?
It is, stability is also, especially when it comes to the human body, maintaining a certain amount of being able to work against the forces that come from wherever they come from. Even let's say a squat is a very good example for that. You have to maintain stability during the whole process of the movement. So it's not only, oh, you have such a stable squat just because you have a good positioning in the lowest position, you know. You also have to be stable and have to keep stability all the way down and all the way up. And that's also a very important one to keep that in mind. Stability is something where you keep everything in the body stable where it needs to be as efficient as possible for what you want to do.
All right. Yeah, makes sense.
I hope that was a good one.
Yeah. An important question now. Does doing squats on a BOSU ball improve stability on a normal squat and thus reduce risk of injury?
Usually not.
Yeah.
It's very important to understand that. When you have maybe an injury in the knee, or you had that, it's done. Yeah, that's very important to say. When you have that, you don't do that. When you had that, and you are on the way to recover from that, it may make sense to do squats on a BOSU ball or something, maybe an instable thing that you're standing on, to make your maybe usually when you have the knee as an example, the knee gets stabilized from the feet and from the hips, because that's the knee can only go two directions. So it needs to get stabilized from two directions. And these two, when you look at the hips and the feet and stuff like that, they get stabilized by muscles. And what you do with an unstable underground, this is the same thing that you do with the shoulder on rings and stuff like that. When you bring in an unstable underground, more little stabilizer muscles have to work. So that makes sense to use that in case those are not really working. The thing that comes in here, the best way to train that is to bring load on that in the end. Because when you bring load on that, the body has to stabilize a lot of load. And this is the crux where everybody may think, yeah, I have an unstable underground and I have some load. Let's do some loaded squats on a BOSU ball. Let's combine this. And this is where it gets very, very difficult. Because at that point, the central nervous system jumps in. And the central nervous system is all about keeping you alive. So it will not allow you to use a certain amount of weight there, because you will not be able to use all the muscle fibers that you want to use. Because the body, as the central nervous system wants to protect you. That's the big, big thing that it has to do in your life. So it wants to protect you at that point. So you're probably not using all the muscle fibers that you should use for stabilizing. So at that point, it makes absolutely sense to let the body know, okay, here's something unstable. Let's use more stabilizing muscles for this thing so that you can later on, when you put it to the test, use all the muscle fibers that you need. I try to explain this a very, very easy way, and I hope it's understandable. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a nice one. Like, it's interesting to research the carryover, practicing movements on unstable surface. Which carryover does it have to stable surfaces, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I'm not really sure how these two are connected, because, you know, you can't go around the principle of specificity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really, really important one to consider. You obviously want to stay as specific as possible to a certain movement.
Absolutely.
And practicing that will obviously make you better at it, you know? It's not like if your squat on a Bosu ball goes up, that your back squat will necessarily also go up at the same time.
I hope nobody got that wrong here.
Yeah, that's important to note.
It's not like you're doing Bosu ball squats to improve performance. That's not the case. You're doing Bosu ball squats, maybe on one leg or something, to recover from an injury, but only if your physiotherapist tells you that.
That's it.
There is absolutely no other reason to do that except of your physiotherapist is telling you to do so. No yes. other reason. There is no fucking reason. And here comes something that is also very important, because from that point on, you may think, yeah, but then I don't need to do ring work. I don't need to do my ring dips, my ring push-ups, because it makes no sense at all too. And here is something very, very important. Your hips are not your shoulders. Because your femur is different sitting in your hips than your humerus is sitting in your shoulders. That's different, and that's why you need to work a lot more stabilizing shit on the shoulders than on the hips, usually. That doesn't mean you don't have to do any stabilizing work in your lower body work. This is why I Radu, you know that I always let do people some unilateral work for lower body. I always do that to just keep them being able to stabilize here. And on the other hand, for the upper body, it makes absolutely sense to do some stability work with rings and stuff like that, or even dumbbell work. That's still stabilizing. It's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very important to understand that the hips are different to the shoulders, completely different.
Right. let's get back onto our topic. I think we went a bit away from it. But we'll do a brief recap at the end, definitely, for everything then.
Can we actually prevent or reduce injury? Yes, we can reduce with some mobility stuff if you don't have the range where you want to go in there, you may be able to do some mobility drills and then go into that range and then learn to stabilize there. Yes, that's true. For most people that I have seen, most people just have to learn how to move in there. Most of the people don't need special mobility training. Most people just need to learn how to move.
And yeah. Sorry.
Please keep on going.
Yeah, and I think like using something as technique adaptation and changing it up and adapting it to an individual is definitely the first thing you want to do if you find like someone isn't working as good as he could.
Yeah.
Rather than going into some mobility drills to open up whatever, you know, because for someone maybe squatting wider should just do the job instead of doing a 20-minute ankle mobility drill, you know, just going in a wider stance is better for that person, no? Yeah. That's it.
Absolutely. I'm 100% agreeing with that. That this is an easy example. Yesterday I did hurt my back. And I'm doing a lot of injury risk reduction stuff, but this time I fucked up my back just 2 weeks ago. It hurts and now it's better, but I'm filming my back squats. I saw, okay, you're a little bit instable. And I just went a little bit wider and put my feet a little bit more into another direction. And that fixed my problem. There was no, oh, Nick, do you see the feet? Now you need to drill the feet and have more ankle mobility. And what is going on here? Do you need to stretch the hips or something like that? No, it was just fixing my technique. I saw it on the video. I fixed it. And in the next set, I was able to keep everything in the way how it needed to be. And that's a very important one right here to bring that in. Technique is for most of the people the most important thing for risk reduction. I see that all the time. People are coming into our coaching, having some issues, having some pain, think they are injured, and we just tell them, well, we have to see what's going on. Then we improve the technique and immediately the pain is gone and they're not injured anymore. But they weren't even injured. It was just they're using an incorrect technique, which would lead to something overworking, or maybe, I don't know. In the end, it was just fixing the technique that fixed the problem. And this is very important to understand here.
Yeah, it's interesting that you have people now who are saying that technique doesn't matter and that because our bodies are able to adapt to anything, we can just do whatever. I mean, I can't really comprehend that because there's always a more efficient way to get to a load from point A to point B.
Yeah.
You know? And positioning and technique obviously matters. And it's going to be different for each individual.
Yes.
You know? And how you dose it and what you dose really depends on who you work with. So someone that came in with an injury might have just done squats with something that isn't quite tailored to him. And it led to, just as you noted, to him overworking a certain region because he's simply working too much through that, you know?
Yeah.
Just adapting and tweaking a little bit shifts the focus of the load to some other body parts, which allows him to work more efficiently and thus reduce risk of injury, man. And this is not to say that there are bad movements. Like, I don't like to label movements as bad and positions as necessarily incorrect. We talked about it, like my stance on spinal flexion has changed a lot in the last year.
Yeah.
I was a firm believer that spinal flexion is something bad that leads to injury. It's something that people should avoid. Like, as noted, the body can adapt if you properly dose it, properly increase to that. But this is always different for each individual. Like, for me on the sumo deadlift, I can always allow myself a certain amount of spine flexion because I'm able to maintain stiffness there And this allows me to be more efficient with my technique, actually, because I'm able to allow the shoulders to hang lower and thus have less range of motion. Mm-hmm. So for someone else, this could be too much and actually lead to some overworked body parts and thus sometimes to injury. So it's really hard to tell, you know?
And this is very important to mention here. It's also about all the time. It is about the physics. When you're talking about some flexion in your spine, you're probably not saying I have a completely rounded lumbar spine.
Of course, yeah.
That's very important to say here. That's not the case. We're talking about some flexion in the thoracic spine, as that's where we can use it for his advantage, and where it makes sense. So there are some things when we look at it which make absolutely sense, but there are also some general rules to technique which always come in. I mean, a flexion in the lumbar spine in a deadlift is probably something where I would say that's a very general rule, you shouldn't do it. I would say so. But on the other hand, you can still bring in, that's not a bad movement if you do it once. If you do it over and over and over and over again, plus you're sitting a lot, maybe your truck driver is sitting all day, then you are always in a flexion position. There are two views to that. You may think, okay, when that guy is always in a flexion because he's sitting all day in truck, and then he's doing some deadlifts in a flexion, completely rounded, that can lead to disc prolapse. Absolutely, because they are always pressed out, and then they are pressed out under pressure. On the other hand, you could say, okay, maybe that's even better for him because he's now strengthening the position that he's always in. There are two point of views for that. And we still don't know what's wrong and right on that one. It's interesting, but most of the time when it comes to that, there is no bad and no good for that. But for most people, and this is generally speaking, it is most of the time better to not do a flexion in the lumbar spine when you look at it, to just keep this one closed. And that's very interesting because of course, you will always have some exceptions. I don't know. Do you know on Instagram this warm guy? Oh, I have to send that.
I'm not sure.
There's a guy who's using really big loads on squats and deadlifts, and he has always a rounded back. Always. And he's making jokes about that and calling himself the warm guy and stuff like that. I mean, he may be an exception of he's not dying from that. But on the other hand, there is a lot of people who are having issues because of rounded back and stuff like that. So in the end, you have also a lot of people who can do their pull-ups with completely elevated and protracted shoulder blades, and they're not dying. They still, I mean, to have the connection to the last episode with pulling, they are not dying. And it's, for them, it's not a bad position. But for a lot of people, it is a shitty position. So in the end, you can't really say there's a bad movement, there's a bad position. There's just a position that your body can't tolerate.
That's it. You can't tolerate it. That's it. And this is directly connected to the topic of volume and intensity and how much you dose it, the way you program, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, if you have too big of a jump in volume or intensity, whatever, even if you are in a perfect position, you know, you can still risk something.
Absolutely.
So this thing, volume and intensity management and fatigue management, is probably the core of injury risk reduction.
Absolutely.
You know, this is the most important thing, I would say.
Yeah. And this is something I see a lot. When you look into the calisthenics community, a lot of people rip their biceps off. Most of the time that happened because of shitty volume and intensity management at that point.
Yeah.
That's it. That's why it happened. This is not most of the time it's not an accident.
Yeah.
It is done by your shitty management. And you, at that point, I don't want to be rude to someone at that point, because most of the time you don't know that you don't tolerate it until something happens.
Mm-hmm.
So on the other hand, this is also very important. There are usually some little small signs that you feel before something happens. Not always, but most of the time you feel that coming. Maybe a little discomfort, maybe just a little nagging, just a little small tiny thing. We all had that. This little thing, oh, today I feel so tight in my neck, and then you feel tight for weeks, and then suddenly the shoulder injury comes in. And we all know that. Take a break, reduce volume, reduce intensity, work up again. Because the thing with that is you can also train yourself into this. Your body can get used to it when you train him to get used to it. There is some work capacity that you can get used to, but you always have to let the body adapt to it. Give him some time. Be a little bit more patient at that point. That's so important. I have said that so often, but the thing with this building momentum, it's not only adaptation of strength. Building momentum also means building momentum up to really have this big wave of volume and intensity. Build a wave. Be the tsunami. Take your time.
Yes.
And then crash into the world and destroy everything.
That's a nice analogy.
I think that's very important. So again, what you said with the volume and intensity, this is so, so, so crucial, Rado.
Mm-hmm.
That's so right. That's so important, because that's why shit happens all the time. Maybe you're coming from holiday. That's what happened to me right now, where I was just stupid. I didn't train a lot because I was on holiday. Then I jumped back into training and I had the same thinking of, okay, Nick, you can use the weights that you used before jumping into training. And that's when my something in my glutes just overworked, because it wasn't prepared anymore. I didn't have the capacity anymore. I wasn't able to handle that. And it's not like that I'm bad injured or something, but it hurts a little bit. So what I forgot was, Nick, you didn't train really and not really heavy for 1.5 weeks. That's it. And what would have been the better solution for me would have been to go into training with less of my ego, going in there, using the weights that were actually my RPE, not what I think what was my RPE, because I was used from my last block, which was pretty successful. My last blocks were really crazy. And then I jumped into that and overworked it. So I didn't hit the right volume and intensity. I mean, the volume was not high, but I put in too much intensity, and that was my decision. That was my personal fault. I jumped into that and I decided I can do this. That was an ego thing, and you can learn from that, and I dare you to learn from that. Don't jump into that stuff with a stupid mind of I think I must be able to do this. Yes, you will be able to do this when you build up the momentum. Be the tsunami. Start low, come up high. That's very important to have it here. And that's something where what you need to keep in mind when it comes to that stuff. Most of the time, especially when your training is RPE based, it's us who are taking the wrong decisions. Your coach never thought of, let's write an RPE down where this guy can injure himself. I want him to get injured. Nobody thinks that way. What the fuck? Come on. I think that's a very important one. And then with this volume and intensity, the overworked muscle come in. And that's it. Injury is always something where something in your body got overworked. That can come from an angle that you use the maybe wrong technique for that muscle or tissue or something. Yeah, it might have been the wrong angle for that one. And volume and intensity. Overworked. It's always overworked. And that's it. So there's one last thing that Rado brought into this that I really want to leave to you, because I think you can really handle it very well. And this is the topic of variety.
Yeah, variety is an interesting one. And it's actually proven that if you introduce variety in your training, you actually reduce the risk of injury, because, I mean, it's pretty straightforward when you think about it. You just are introducing a similar movement pattern, but not quite hitting the body parts in the same way, you know? And what you can do wonderfully with variety is still introduce volume for that body region for a specific movement pattern, but not really in the same fashion, you know? So if you usually do chin-ups, introducing something like a pull-up on the other day might be a wonderful way to reduce the risk of injury and overuse. Huh? If you were to do chin-ups 2 times a week, if you maybe don't respond to that quite well, but you still are able to get some vertical pulling volume in, and in that way have a certain carryover still to the chin-up and still make gains.
Yeah.
You know, so just introducing variety, of course, not too much variety. You don't want to do that too. You want to still stay as specific as possible to the task, but introducing some of it, not only in the main work, but also assistance work throughout the block and from one block to the other, is another measure alongside with volume and intensity and fatigue management that you can do to reduce the risk of injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very interesting topic, because you have different, let's say, schools which say different things about it. When you look into something like emerging strategies from RTS, they are having less variety when it comes to their development blocks and also the really strength phase and stuff like that. And then you also have like West Side. With their approach to training, they have such a big load of variety all the time, and they are pretty much prepared for anything. And on the other hand, you also have sports like CrossFit, which have such a big variety of movements in the competition sport that you might think, okay, yes, now we are talking about variety, and variety is just being something that really keeps you healthy. On the other hand, when you are always bringing in something new, you can also get injured from not being prepared for that movement because it was too much variety on that point. So that's why you see, maybe, let's say, I think that must be like 3 years ago when they had like ring dips in the CrossFit Games. And I think they had like 27 people ripping off the pecs. I think the point here was they had some variety in training. And they were, I mean, in the end, They were pre-fatigued, very much pre-fatigued on the packs. And that variety was a little bit too much for the for them. And this is for athletes who are used to a massive load of variety. I mean, we are talking about games athletes. That's, I mean, you can think about CrossFit whatever you want to, but these guys are some of the fittest persons in the world. There's a reason why this is so crazy to be the fittest man on earth. They may not be the biggest squatter in the world. They may not be the one who has the biggest snatch in the world or the highest amount of weight that you use in a pull-up or something, but they can actually go into any sport and perform at least well. At least well. So they are, in a generalistic way seen, extremely fit. Extremely. I think most of them would just kill me on anything. I would not be able to go into the games and perform like them.
Yeah, they're beasts. I think that the CrossFit just gets too much unnecessary weight.
Yeah. But there can also be too much variety. So you have to think in terms of, yes, I want the variety, and I still want to have the variety over a longer period of time. That's, I think, the most important one right here. So you have periods of time where you do the variety so that you can really overload something until the point where you need to change it and then you change it. So it makes sense to have the variety. It makes sense to keep in mind it might be too much variety, but it makes absolutely sense to see this as a much, much bigger picture. Seeing the time frames of the variety in like really several years. I think that's an important one.
Mm. Yep. I think we handled everything that we had now.
Right now we handle, I think. Do you wanna bring it all together?
Yeah, sure. So we talked about using the term injury risk reduction instead of the injury prevention term, because you can't really prevent injuries, but you can actually reduce the risk of injuries. Second thing we talked about is mobility. Is mobility a good preventative measure for reducing the risk of injury? And this, the answer to this is, for most people, no. So for most people, what are good measures of actually managing injury risk reduction? First thing you want to do is manage the volume and the intensity. You want to plan everything and program everything. Stick to the program. As Nick said, build up the wave. You want to be the tsunami, build up the momentum. So start up low and also increase low. Follow the plan and leave your ego at the door. Second thing you want to do is definitely introduce some variety. So have some variety in your training program in whatever form, but be careful because this is a double-edged sword. Too much variety can be counterproductive as well as not enough variety. So you want to properly dose that. And third thing, obviously, technique does matter. So there's always a more efficient way to move a weight. Don't be afraid of certain movements and don't label them as bad. You can adapt to everything, what you can adapt to and what's the best position for you. It's highly individual and you have to find out for yourself. So I think we have everything there, no?
Yes. In the end, to put it all into one sentence, the risk reduction is to make sure you don't overwork a tissue or a muscle.
That's it.
And these are the ways to do so. I hope this one helped you a lot. If you need any help with that, we are here. We are doing that stuff for a living. So bar-bellcoaching.de/links. There you can find us to get some help with that. And we would love to be the supporting guys to help you with that. All right. Enjoy yourself. Have a good training. Don't get injured and get very, very, very strong. Have a good one.